know, back in the days of yore, in, say, the 1950s, the only plastic you'd find in a home was a vinyl record or nylon stockings. That was pretty much it. Even the first credit card was made out of cardboard. Toys were made with wood. Milk came in glass, maybe, or maybe even waxed cardboard at that point.
Those primitive people, how did they survive?
Now, plastic is everywhere. In fact, if you have something that is man-made and you don't know for sure that it is made of wood or metal, it's probably made from plastic. So what? Well, Susan Franco wrote an entire book telling you, so what? She's the author of Plastic, A Toxic Love Story, and she joins us now. Susan, good morning.
Good morning.
So tell me something that maybe surprisingly is made of plastic that we may not expect.
Well, one of the surprises to me was discovering that my front doorknob, which I thought was brass, was made of plastic. And when
great.
The plumber was here recently and had to take out the faucet of my tub, I discovered that was also plastic.
Wow. And it, you had no idea because it looked like metal and it shined like metal and you polished it like metal.
Exactly.
So, I mean, one of the things that you examine in your book is the way in which not only our worlds and our environment, but we ourselves increasingly even ingest plastic in a way that makes kind of blurs that line between man-made and nature-made.
Yeah, as a reporter in the 1970s put it, humans are just a little bit plastic now. And that's because plastics are often made with additives that don't completely atomically bond with the plastic molecules, the polymer molecules. And under certain circumstances and with certain plastics, then the additives are able to get out, and they get out into, you know, say, the food that we eat, or they get into the air that we breathe, they get into the dust that we breathe, and they get into our bloodstreams.
And, you know, one of the great things about this book is that not only does it describe some of the sort of environmental issues that are associated with plastic, which have been documented before, but in total, it's this narrative of this fundamentally new kind of substance that plastic was, which affected the way we constructed chairs. You tell a great story there. But I wonder if I could just get you to tell the story of how the plastic soda bottle came about and how scientifically interesting that was and how it had a huge effect on almost everything.
Yeah, that's a great story. I was surprised to discover that the inventor of the plastic soda bottle was Nathaniel Wyeth, who was the son of N.C. Wyeth, the illustrator, and the brother of painter Andrew Wyeth and painter Henrietta Wyeth. And unlike the rest of his family, he wasn't artistically inclined, but he had a great mind for science, and he became an industrial chemist and got interested in the problem of plastic bottles. He wondered, why does soda, this was in the early 70s, why does soda always come in glass? And colleagues told him it was because if you tried to put it into plastic, the carbonation would make the bottles explode. He said, well, that's crazy. You know, that doesn't seem right. Plastic can do anything. Well, it took him about 10,000 tries to come up with a suitable bottle. He had to sort of figure out how to make the molecules line up in such a way that they could be strong in every direction to hold in all that pressurized fizz. And the soda, the plastic PET soda bottle, the plastic soda bottle debuted, I believe it was 1973. Coke and Pepsi quickly glommed onto it. And, you know, this is the story with so many plastic things I looked at. You know, within just a few short years, you had millions and millions and millions of them. And the ability, you could argue, to put drinks in plastic and eliminate glass really changed our drinking habits. It made it possible to make much bigger bottles of soda. So, you know, we drink more, and as scientists have charted, the more we drink, the fatter we get.
Bottled water
contributed to obesity.
Right, bottled water wouldn't be possible, the entire industry.
Bottled water. Yeah. Who would be carrying around glass bottles of water at this point?
Well, I actually have a water bottle that's made of glass, but that's because I don't like the BPAs that come along with so many of the plastic things. But, you know, what's interesting, Susan, is you're not a plastic hater. You're not arguing in this book that we need to get rid of all these plastic things. Most of your suggestions are using plastic with limitations, i.e., you say don't ban plastic grocery bags when you go to the grocery store because that makes people use paper bags. What's a better solution?
On the paper and plastic, the solution is neither. The solution is to bring your own bag. It's not that I'm opposed to bans. I just think that we need to... Plastics are great materials, but all too often we have used them in foolish, sometimes dangerous, and really short-sighted ways. And I think the trick is to figure out how to use them better, and that starts with being aware. And being aware of plastic and being aware of sort of the consequences of cheap plastics. So in the case of grocery bags, you know, we get them for free, but they're not free. They have some serious environmental costs. And I would want people to go to grocery stores and think about how they're going to take the groceries home. And I think the best way to do that is with a bag that you can use over and over and over again,
well, you
not
know,
a one-time use.
Susan, after I read that chapter, I actually went online and I did a quick search, and I found a bunch of blogs of people who are trying to live plastic-free, and they can't do it.
Because they're blogging on plastic computers.
Well, they're so ubiquitous. Plastic at this point is so ubiquitous. This one woman couldn't even find shampoo that was plastic-free. I mean, it's almost impossible at this point.
You can't live plastic-free. It is, you know, the woof and wharf of everyday life. We can't completely escape it, but we can think harder about how we use it.
You know, the other great thing about this book that I hadn't thought about until I read your words is that there's this narrative of plastic. The word itself means that it can be anything, and that's the story of why it's proliferated. But the one thing plastic can't be or has a real difficult time being is not plastic anymore, and that's the trouble we're in.
That is the trouble we're in. You know, these are very, very, very big molecules, and the microbes that exist that break down all kinds of natural materials haven't evolved yet to be able to digest them. And as a result, plastics last a very long time, and we see the consequences of that in places like, you know, the far reaches of the Pacific Ocean, where you have all of this plastic debris and sort of this confetti of plastic suffused through the water column.
There are alternatives. Susan Frankel, author of Plastic, A Toxic Love Story. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.